This is CISO to CISO, a live podcast focusing on information security, leadership, innovation, and more. Brought to you by Altitude Networks, data security for the cloud. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of CISO to CISO. I'm your host, Michael Coates, and couldn't be more excited to be here today, bringing to you Surbhi Tugnawat, the CISO from SRI International. We're going to have a great conversation. Surbhi, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Michael.
Great. And for those of you that are listening and have heard other editions of the webcast or the podcast, you know where to find these new episodes. For everyone else, you can find them at the Altitude Networks website, where you can view the webcasts that you see here, subscribe to the podcast, et cetera. And these shows are brought to you by Altitude Networks. We do data security and cloud collaboration environments. So if you're using Google Workspace, Office 365, and want to prevent your files from being shared to the wrong people, stolen by mistake, stolen on purpose, any of those things, that's our specialty. So check us out. With that said, super excited to dive in. So Surbhi, tell us, you're now the CISO at SRI International, but did you wake up one morning as a child and say, my life's goal is to be a CISO? Or how did you end up on that path and get there?
I wish. So my journey to CISO is quite serendipitous. After I graduated, I tried my hands on various jobs. I graduated into recession. And so I started with a tech support job. I tried that for a few months till I got my first opportunity to continue working as a programmer that I trained for. I'm actually one of those proud holders of SCJP, some certified Java programmer badges. and actually I have it still lying around somewhere in the house, and I know I'm completely dating myself in this story, but essentially I thought I was just passively working with security, or didn't have a good grasp of it till I joined Ernst & Young. And that's where I got an opportunity to work on security frameworks and methods. I got a chance to deploy identity and access management tools across various different industries. I went through the whole identity lifecycle. And this is when I did the third party risk assessments and got understanding of IT internal controls. Did many cybersecurity assessments. And that's where I thought I enjoy cybersecurity, and I've never looked back since. So that was my introduction to cybersecurity 101, let me say, and got great experience across various different industries, which I'm able to now apply in this role as well.
Yeah, the path through consulting is one that I see quite often. I took that path as well for a number of years. And you probably had a similar experience that I did, which was you get to see a lot of different environments, which doing that in a somewhat quick period of time really helps see the variations. Like, oh, the security principles, sure, those make sense. But now everything's thrown out the window with this new set of needs and requirements in this company and then this. So I have to imagine that helped supercharge your advancement in the career too.
Absolutely. The exposure, like you said, you get, and the adaptability that you get to experience, like one size does not fit all. So you are able to adapt to various different and try to tweak controls. And I think that experience is instrumental in the thought process.
And then from Ernst & Young, you made a few more steps before ultimately ending up at SRI. Is that right?
That is right. So after that, I joined the First Republic Bank, where I was identity and access management team. And then I started leading the identity access management team at SRI before I was asked to take on the CISO's position.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, identity and access management being fundamental, perhaps the core item. If you don't do that right, it's pretty hard to do anything else correct at all.
As they say, you are as secure as your weakest link, and identity is your weakest link.
Yep. Now, at SRI, I mean, this must be fascinating. And if you can, share a little bit about that organization for everyone. I don't think everyone has a solid understanding of the types of things you do and perhaps the types of threats. But you're working on implementing CMMC framework as well. How is that going, and how is that helping position you against some of the unique threats that you have to face?
Absolutely, yeah. SRI International, and believe me, before I joined them, I had very limited understanding and exposure to SRI. SRI International is we are a defense contractor. We've been in business for 75 years. This year is when we're celebrating our 75th anniversary. This is an organization that does a lot of work for Department of Defense. That's like 75 to 80% of our revenue comes from Department of Defense projects. So you can imagine the kind of sensitivity around the research work that our researchers are engaged in. And there's a wide array of research. It's a very heterogeneous environment. We are doing research for bioscience, for education. We have a sleep research. We have speech research. We have research on robotics, artificial intelligence, a huge area of research. So in our environment, we are dealing with a lot of regulation and compliance requirements. You mentioned CMMC, and that is the brand new compliance and regulatory requirement enforced by Department of Defense. So DoD, back in November last year, came up with this interim ruling for DFARS, where they require all federal contractor, all defense contractor in the supply chain to start complying to a model that they are developing. It's called CMMC, Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification. It's just another assessment that a third party assessment will do, but it's different because it's a maturity model, just like CMMI, the capability maturity model. So the cybersecurity practices will be rated on level 1 to 5 based on their maturity. So CMMC is still in development. DoD is taking a very slow crawl, walk, run approach to this. They are requiring that contractors make sure that they have the right level of maturity before they are granted any contract from Department of Defense on any project. So they have come up with this methodology that's based on various different frameworks. It uses NIST 800-171, which is for control unclassified information. It also leverages NIST 853, moderate and high. And at this point, like this year, they are only rolling out till level 1, 2, 3. So that's something that our, because we are a defense contractor and we are constantly competing with other organizations for bids, and we are responding to proposals. So this gives us a competitive edge to be certified early on. And that's a journey that SRI has taken. It's been a little challenging because anybody who has worked with any standards before, you know, by stock, I know that, you know, this takes time to mature. As they roll out, there are a gazillion questions that everybody's asking and everybody's trying to make sense of. And as we are embarking this journey and trying to be the first few contractors that get certified, there is definitely a lot of suggestions that's coming from us and going back to the accreditation body that is managing CMMC. It is definitely a great idea, especially now that we are seeing all those third-party risks impacting the whole industry. Having a maturity model that can be leveraged consistently across the whole industry gives us good visibility into what is the maturity level of an organization who we are trusting with our data or our services. And I do see, Michael, that this is something that will create a lot of business opportunities for a lot of people in this space. Organizations target to be a registered practitioner or certified practitioner so they can advise people on how to get or meet certain controls. There are new assessors that are being certified by CMMC. So this is a great opportunity for all the firms that are, you know, doing assessments just to add another kind of service to their catalog. An opportunity for an organization to have a competitive advantage if they can be CMMC. Also, all your listeners who are in training, I think they get to be the first few trainers of CMMC control. So I think there is an immense opportunity. The whole industry will benefit from this. from reliability, credibility, as well as a business opportunity perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's fascinating in the sense that it can unlock doors for contractors to win bids. Also, you know, the CMMI concept, the maturity model concept, it's a good approach anyway. I mean, separate from if you're doing CMMC to fully get accredited or certified. But at Twitter, when I was there, CISO, you know, we still looked at the CMMI model just for an internal valuation of like, what is the maturity of our different domains? And can we express to internally to our team and to others, like, where do we want to be? Because the thing I like about it is you shouldn't aim for everything to be five. I mean, unless you really need that, that would be crazy. But you can start to say, hey, this is how much rigor we have, how much maturity we have. This is right. Or we need a roadmap to move from two to three, three to four. And it helps give some structure to the otherwise somewhat nebulous field that we're in, where if you don't apply some structure, it just feels like you're firefighting without like a real purpose.
You're so right. It paves a path for you to enhance your capabilities. And the good thing about CMMC is it kind of fills a hole. We always had like assessments. You could have done an ISO level one or two, or you could have FedRAMP level low, medium, high. Those kind of assessments can assess you only for your practices that are in place. We haven't accounted for processes, like this I is all based on processes. This model, the framework they're developing, combines process and practice together. So you can say that, yeah, I have a practice to not have easily guessable passwords across my application. So password 123 not allowed, that's a good practice. But do you have a process to support that practice does not, you know, lag behind? That we have never assessed. So this is definitely a difficult undertaking, and kudos to DoD for starting on this path. They started us on the CMM path back in 1980. So I'm glad that they are starting this, and I see a huge opportunity for the entire industry to level up to this. What I know is DoD will have every single contractor or every single proposal by end of 2025 to go through this. So by that time, I do see a lot of organizations already having a very mature process and practice based on the amount of COID that they handle. Mm-hmm. So that's something to look forward to for sure. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. And perhaps dating myself, I remember when another major requirement certification came out, when Sarbanes-Oxley came out, and how that was a frenzy of activity across the whole spectrum of people to assess, people to learn, people to train. So it's good. Never a dull moment, never a shortage of work, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Now, for people that are watching this recording, and those of you listening, podcasts are great, but you're missing something if you're not watching. It's very colorful behind us, and people are perhaps wondering why. Now, for those of them that have watched previous episodes, they know that we hop on the virtual altitude jet and fly on location. So we've really rolled out all the expenses here. but Serbi, tell everyone where we are, why it is so colorful, and what is going on behind us.
So we are celebrating Holi. We are in India. Holi is something that the entire India celebrated. Well, I hope not this year because of coronavirus, but Holi is a celebration of color, as you can see from the background. It's a celebration of love. It's the celebration of arrival of spring. This is one of my favorite festivals. It's on this day, we play with color, and we throw colors at our friends and family and strangers and anybody who we want to. There is a popular saying that thou shall not mind, it's holy. And that's what I love about it. There's a fun and a lot of friendliness associated with this celebration. Well, last year was difficult. We didn't celebrate it because of the pandemic COVID outbreak. This year, we did celebrate it at home, but within our bubble. Somebody was asking me that, you know, are you looking for normal? And normal for me is when I can do something like this, play Holi just as we used to before. So Michael, I can just take some color and throw it at you, like that.
I like it. Very cool. Yeah, it looks like quite the experience. And if the pictures are really conveying any justice, I mean, man, it's just beautiful. Lovely. Wow. Okay, let's see. So you said some interesting things, you know, about SRI. In the space you're in, you're doing a lot of interesting things that need to be very secure. So if I understand correctly, there's a ton of research happening at your organization, which I'm not a PhD researcher, but I have to assume that takes plenty of creativity and freedom to explore different things. That must be a unique challenge with the requirements of security and control, so to speak. How are you seeing that? How do you balance that?
Oh, yeah. I'm living my dream implementing security, if I can say so. The research, just like you said, the research environment needs to offer some type of flexibility and opportunity for collaboration. And that's very difficult. And I'm not trying to say that this environment is so uniquely different from anything out there. But research is research. Like, these people explore things. And as I said, at SRI, we do various types of research. It's a very heterogeneous ecosystem where some of our researchers are dealing with SPII in education. Some are dealing with defense CUI data. Some of them are dealing with clinical research done on the animals. So there is a huge variety, and there's a need to meet all the various different compliance regulatory requirements. On top of it, now it's CMMC that we are all trying to address and meet. So that definitely make our a little bit of a challenge. And I'm not trying to say that this is very different in a way that, you know, of course, every organization will have silos where there is a different pocket where they cannot, that prohibits them from standardizing controls. You know, if you think of a baseline configuration, they might have a pocket where it's not applicable. In our case, every 50 users are doing different research. So when you talk about standardizing, you are really looking at that kind of variation. So yeah, definitely it's a problem. Well, it's a unique situation. And good thing about our environment, like you said, there are smart PhD researchers who are able to find creative answers to our problem. Things that regular solutions, a VPN solution, a DLP solution can offer for us, our researchers then develop and provide some you know, variation or a niche solution that we are able to then utilize. And it is definitely helpful when we are collaborating with other research institutes, with other education institutes, especially for projects that have a very secure guidelines, a critical guideline from sharing perspective. Now that document, once on a collaborative environment, say Office 365 or Box, and multiple people are editing it, how do we make sure the right people want to see? So those kind of unique challenges that we come across and then we leverage on our existing solution that researchers developed to cater to that situation. And also, it's talking about people, talking about researchers. Ours is an environment, like I said, is 75 years old. So we have a huge wide array of people with different experience. I'll give you a story, Michael. When I first joined SRI 5 years ago, that week I joined, we were celebrating our 70th anniversary. So there was an old hands that happened, and our CEO, you know, old hands asked, "Hey, everybody, if you have been with the organization for 60 years or so, please stand up." I'm like, "What, 60 years? I turned back and there are people." I don't know the exact number now, but there were a few people who have been with the organization for that long. Then he said, "Okay, if you have been here for 55 years, there are 15, 20 people who have been with SRI for that long." So while there is a huge institutional knowledge, this is also a challenge from change management and adoption of new technology perspective. When we rolled out MFA, we were like, "Oh, MFA, we will do push, you know, phone, the phone-based MFA." we soon learned that there are people who do not even have smartphones. And there are people who will not put any app on their smartphone if they have it because of their background and the mindset they come from. So that is quite different. And then of course we do confidential research. So there are people who will not take anything to a secured lab, which has to meet the confidentiality requirement by DoD. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of, like, that is just a quick example. And I thought that was an easy win. Mm-hmm. We got a good grip over it. And now we are doing our roadshow where we're going to talk to our users about our MFA solution. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling people, oh, you can use this or you can use that. And this is the third option. And this is the fourth option for you. And this gentleman looks at me and says, yeah, I'm writing a standard on dual authentication for IoT. So I kind of know what you're talking about. I'm like, I just can't get it right. Either I am like too naive or I'm like too basic. So that is the environment that we are in. And while we are battling our researchers who are focused on coming up with a productive solution, we don't want to inhibit them by mm-hmm. adding more controls. But at the same time, we're required to meet these very strict requirements by DoD that we are trying to seamlessly and maybe like in a standard way apply throughout the institute. So yeah, that is definitely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, your story about the MFA option and the, you know, in some cases, the lack of smartphones, it really is such a good example of what we see in security. And if you think about the journey of security of just learning, like I remember at the beginning, you learn like the ways to break something, you learn the more secure way. And then you find yourself as like a zealot, like this is the only way, it has to be this way. And then you get a little farther. And just like you said, you find a position where you learn like, here are the variations, like here's the environments. And I remember that same thing myself, at Twitter, for example, there'd be this conversation, well, why not just require 2FA for all of your users around the world? Well, one, there's, you know, usability impact, but two, think of global adoption of smartphones, just like your example, just because you and all your friends, well, not you, but the proverbial you have smartphones doesn't mean that's the world. And so I that becomes some of the most interesting security challenges. Like, sure, this is the way that's more secure, but that's not an option. So now what?
Exactly. And what you just said makes sense, you know, because there are a lot of service providers, a lot of vendors right now working on cool technologies, like cool services. For example, passwordless is such an in thing. Everybody's trying to aim for passwordless. But when they try to accomplish that, they are putting the dependency on phones. And like you just said, I mean, that might not be a very viable solution for organizations like us who cannot really rely on a smartphone for simple things. So absolutely right. I mean, this was a key learning, like you just said, like how you experience with Twitter. I'm thinking this is one thing that if all your listeners are there working on a solution just based on phones or just very, you know, the USB, YubiKey. Based on USB-C, and what if it's not an option? What if those ports are blocked and you cannot put it there? So, I mean, those are the considerations that's like totally worth, and experience, diverse experience like this help you think through those mm-hmm. issues. Yep.
And then, you know, working with different units throughout the company that have different requirements, it almost sounds like an example of where we're going to security, which is, They are fundamentally our customers, and how do we make our objectives be usable to them? That new world of security, which is like, it's all about empowering and usable systems, which in fact is even harder for us. Like it was hard enough to do security to begin with, but now to do it elegantly and easily for the end user, it's a whole nother challenge.
Absolutely, so much and so much of a priority. It is in our team goal this year that, you know, we are going to make our researchers' life easy. Mm-hmm. A goal that an entire team is going to have it in mandatory goal for the entire team. Like you just said, the usability is our top priority. It's not that we'll secure all our entire institute. That's definitely there. That's a core. But we have to, whatever service we provide, it has to be usable. We cannot cause more heartburn to our people. It has to be friendly, business friendly.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when you look at the journey you've been through and seen a lot of interesting learnings along the way. What is your advice to, you know, the next generation of CISOs, the people that today they're entering the field and they say, for whatever crazy reason, like, I want to be in that role one day. One, I sort of tell them, buckle up, it's a bit of a ride. But do you have any advice to give these rising stars?
You know, Michael, we were just talking about business friendly. And I think that, to me, is the key. It's such an important aspect that it's a goal for the entire team. And I think this should be a goal for all information security professionals if they want to rise up. My recommendation, this is something I'm trying to implement myself. Like I just said, this is my annual goal. I will do this. And I recommend everybody else try that as well, is to have certain trusted partners within your organization, within your workspace that you can bounce ideas with. Every time you roll out, you get a pulse check on how it is being perceived. Any standard you write, any policy that you publish, get feedback. I can say that, yes, this is based on a framework and it has to be, it's a mandate and it should be implemented, but if right it is arrived and when we take people's feedback, their perception and they're more open to it. They welcome it. So seek feedback and have people that you reach out to, your technical liaison, your business liaison, mm-hmm. that you do a pulse check with anything. And similarly, have that kind of relationship outside of your organization. That is one thing, again, I'm trying to work on. People you can bounce ideas with. You can course correct yourself if you talk to your peers, other people in your industry who are might be experiencing the same issue or they have already overcome that issue. So it's a good idea to have certain trusted relationships within organization and outside organization, and that help everybody. It'll be mutually beneficial for the whole industry, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I couldn't agree more. The more you know about how the business works and how your actions or requests would impact it, like, the better. Like, the business knowledge will make you a great security person. Yeah, well said. Well, very good. We've covered a lot of ground, a lot of interesting topics. Did we miss anything through all that? Anything else you wanted to throw in there that we may have skipped past?
I think we covered it all. I think this is my world. I laid it in front of you, everything.
Wonderful. Well, Serbi, thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed diving into everything you're doing at SRI, which is a fascinating organization, and also talking about CMMC. That is exciting to say the least. But thanks for sharing everything and lots of good stuff here.
Thank you, Michael.
And thanks everybody for listening. Again, subscribe to the podcast, check out the webcast, and hope to see you on the next show. Thanks.